Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Hello and welcome to Witch Bitches Review. I'm a charred mannequin that just barely resembles a human corpse. Tyler Carson Evans.
And I'm your superstitious Chinese mother who was right all along. You ungrateful brat? That's right, I'm Siren Rex Neenan. This is the podcast where two actual witches analyze representations of witchcraft in media and pop culture, beginning with our in-depth review of the original Charmed series.
Today we're discussing Charmed Season 1, Episode 4, Dead Man Dating.
The title is a play on the phrase dead man walking. According to dictionary.com, this phrase originally referred to when an American prisoner was walking toward his place of execution, and it evolved into an idiom that describes anyone in a doomed or hopeless situation, especially someone who's about to lose their job. I think Dead Man Dating is actually a pretty clever title for the episode, since it refers to a ghost who's heading off to the afterlife one way or another, but still spends 45 minutes trying to get the girl.
This episode was written by Javier Grillo-Marxwalk and directed by Richard Compton. According to IMDb, this episode ranked 8.5 out of 10 and is the one where Piper falls for the ghost of a recently murdered man who needs her help to ensure that he receives a proper burial before an ancient evil spirit can claim his soul. That is a bit of a run-on sentence. And I actually would like to propose that in this episode, this is where Piper's journey into necrophilia starts. Because she not only falls in love with a dead guy in this episode, but gets married to a dead guy later in the series.
You're so gross.
I'm just saying. I mean, I'm not here to kink shame, but it's a little sus, you know?
Yeah, so necrophiliacs out there listening, Piper Halliwell and Tyler here are here to support you.
Excuse me. I never said I supported. I just will not shame.
Okay.
What do you feel about this episode?
Necrophilia aside, I actually really love this episode. Even though Prue's storyline is like super annoying in it, and I'm just going to talk shit about that every time it comes up. But Piper's love story with the ghost Mark, I actually find it very compelling. And I'm always down for a good ghost love story. When we were rewatching this episode to prepare for the podcast, this episode reminded me of one of the premises of The Haunting of Bly Manor on Netflix, that a ghost story and a love story are really the same thing. I thought that was definitely beautiful in the context of Bly Manor, but I think it also is really fitting here.
I love a good birthday episode, but this is actually one that I usually skip when I'm doing a rewatch. After watching it this time around, though, I definitely will not be doing that anymore. I think it's a really compelling story, and it has a lot of elements I really enjoy. I just sort of always found the final showdown a little anticlimactic in comparison to the buildup of the episode, but it wraps up really beautifully in the end, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, like, just all of the conflicts in the episode are really background dressing to the love story of the episode. And the love story is executed very, very well.
Yeah, very, very well. I feel so bad for Piper in this episode, even though I made fun of her in the beginning.
Yeah, I talk like mad shit about her in the beginning. But no, really, it's a great episode, and Holly Marie Combs was really great in it.
Yeah, she did a great job.
All right, so the episode opens with the sound of a doorbell. And I feel like the doorbell is just always ringing at the beginning of episodes. People are always showing up at the Halliwells' houses, and that's super inconvenient, in my opinion. But yeah, Prue inexplicably answers the door, which I would never do. And it's Andy there, and he kind of creepily confesses that he has no reason to be there. It was a really weird line. It was like, hi, I was nowhere near your house, and now I'm at your house. Oh, how romantic. I may not be a fan of Andy. Anyway, so she lets him in and makes some kind of comment, basically references that they've now been dating for a while. Last we heard from them, he invited her on a date, and she was sort of like, meh, I don't know, I better check my quote-unquote book, which is code for back off, creepo, I'm not interested.
She's like, sorry, Andy, I have to deal with my daddy issues first.
Yeah, right. I mean, valid.
Don't honestly, know. Yeah. Don't jump into a relationship if you've got daddy issues.
Listen, no, actually, that's terrible advice, because if I waited to start dating until I got over my daddy issues, I would still be a virgin, Tyler.
All right. So they've not been dating, but they say that they've been dating.
This part bugs the shit out of me, you guys. Okay, Andy gives Prue a key in a box and says it's her birthday present. And he says it's a key to a room at a spa that they are not at yet, which makes absolutely no sense. What kind of hotel sends a key to your home before you get there? How does that happen? Like, you could just break in whenever you felt like it. Like, what is this nonsense?
Maybe this hotel just, like, frequently changes their locks.
I mean, well, again, that's nonsense. That is just not.
It's not a sound business practice.
At all. It's not. And did they not have key cards in the 90s? I feel
maybe
like they did.
Andy just did it as a romantic gesture. Like, he just went to Walmart and bought a key and was like.
Just some random ass key.
He's like, this is a key to the spa. He doesn't tell Prue and she shows up and the key doesn't work on the door.
Okay. Well, Andy is like five kinds of dope so far. So rather than be offended by the fact that obviously this is a key to nothing, Prue is offended by the fact that she thinks Andy is assuming that they're going to have sex. And then Andy's like, no, I got us adjoining rooms. The whole, I don't know, just the whole situation is lame. I would have been like, just get out of my house. You know.
Siren, I feel like Siren has some negative Andy feelings that he needs to work through.
In this scene in particular, like, okay, I'm sorry. Like, you want to have sex with me, even though I have repeatedly blown you off and your solution is to show up with some fake ass Walmart key. Like, no.
I feel like that's just like classic straight man, though.
What F?
Right? Just like.
Well, I don't really understand how
just
they
keep
think,
trying so. Even after she says no. Not okay.
Thank God we have this show about powerful women to reinforce that that tactic works. Anyway.
Anyway, after that, we cut to Mark holding a balloon and being kind of an ass to his mom. He's super disrespectful.
Yeah, his totally hot mom, by the way.
I noticed that you wrote that quite a few times in that.
I did. Because she's, like, a knockout, and she's probably, like, 56 years old, looking like she's 29. That's all I'm saying. I might be legit into Mark's mom. Moving on.
So, it's his birthday, and she warns him to beware of spirits, and asks him to take her little protective charm amulet thing to keep him safe. The charm is featured a few times in the episode, so let's talk about it. Siren, you did some extensive research on the amulets.
I did. I went down a freaking rabbit hole over this talisman. Well, I was like, okay, so spoilers for later in the episode. This episode kind of misrepresents an important Asian deity. So I was wondering if there was also some misrepresentation in the talisman that they use that wards off spirits. So I totally fell into the rabbit hole of this thing, and I have so many details that you guys never asked for. But anyway, the mythical Chinese beast that is depicted on the amulets in this episode is called a Qilin. The Qilin are similar to Greek chimeras in that they are composed of multiple animal parts. They're often depicted as having the face and scales of a dragon, but the body and hooves of a horse with the antlers of a stag. And sometimes they also have aquatic or fish-like qualities. So it's actually it's a very interesting creature. And it was kind of cool to learn about it through the venue of reviewing this episode, because I was not expecting to stumble across the mythology that I'd never heard of before. I think that Shilin is pretty popular, like, in China, but that particular bit of mythology hasn't really, like, blown up in America, at least outside of, like, right. Chinese community.
I had never heard of it before either, but reading the notes that you took on it, it was fascinating.
Yeah. Interestingly, the Shilin creatures have often been compared to unicorns in a couple of ways. In Taoist mythology, the Shilin are gentle creatures, but they punish evildoers, similar to unicorns. And Shilin is often also mistranslated from Chinese to English as unicorn, even though they are totally different creatures physically.
Oh, wait, unicorns punish evildoers?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, I don't have, like, sources to back up this myth, but it's just been common to me for a while. But, yeah, unicorns are supposed to be able to sense, like, who is innocent and pure and who is not. And in mythology, only a pure and innocent or good person can approach a unicorn safely. And that pointy-ass horn on their head will impale itself through your heart if you are an evil person. Who gets too close to a unicorn.
Somebody should have, like, cued in the unicorns in the woods at Hogwarts because they got themselves eaten. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, so, you know, Harry Potter gets just about, like, everything ever wrong, beginning and ending with its author. But, God, I didn't think I'd be able to talk shit about J.K. Rowling today, but you know what? I found a way.
Here's your opening.
But even in Harry Potter, the unicorns were, like, symbols of, like, goodness. They just found that to be the reason they were, like, murdered.
Leave it to a transphobe to murder a unicorn.
What an absolute bitch. anyway.
Moving on.
Yes. So I should say also that China and the rest of Asia are not, like, you know, solely... influenced by just one religion. There are several religions and spiritual paths. And so when we're talking about the Shilin and also the deity Yama, we're gonna have to talk about how those myths are sort of referenced differently within these different spiritualities. So, I mean, we have Hinduism, we have Buddhism, we have Taoism, we have just all sorts of religious influences. And it's important to remember that just because a mythology is common to one area doesn't mean that everyone sees it the same way.
Very well put.
Thank you. Agreed. Thank you. So with that in mind, we're going back to the Shilin, who are not unicorns, and also, as far as we know, not transphobes. So in Buddhist mythology, they can walk on clouds because they are so gentle they don't want to harm a single blade of grass. They are vegetarian and ultimately very peaceful, but if they see a wicked person try to harm an innocent person, they will attack by breathing fire. And I'm loving that energy.
Yes.
So anyway, given all this, it makes sense that the Shilin is associated with protection, but in all my research, I could not find anything to suggest that they are traditionally used as protection against ghosts, like they are in this episode. And other fun fact, the Shilin are also commonly depicted delivering babies like the American stork.
That's so cool.
Yeah, right? I think that's fabulous, actually. I mean, the stork thing makes fuck all sense, really. But imagine the way you think of a stork delivering a baby, and now imagine it's like this chimera dragon. Like, that's way cooler. No offense.
That's
to
how
storks.
I want to be born.
I think that's how I was born.
Mark rejects this charm. He's like, nah, mom. Spirits should be afraid of me. I'm big and bad. I don't need any protection. And then he immediately gets murdered.
Yeah. Bad call, Mark.
Honestly, he goes down this alley, gets surrounded by gangsters. Tony Wong somehow knows it's his birthday. Somehow.
How does he even know who he is, though? Like, that's just very, like, skipped over. Is it sort of like every Chinese person knows every other Chinese person? Is that what the white author of the show thought?
I mean, Mark was like walking down the streets of Chinatown and people were like, hi, Mark. And he was like, hey, what's up? I'm fine. Happy birthday to me. And then he turns a corner and gets shot.
So, oh, so he brought it on himself by being friendly. Okay.
Yeah. Honestly, don't talk to
people.
That's
why you are never supposed to be friendly ever. You heard it here first.
Yeah, he gets shot and then his ghost rises from his body and the gangsters plant a ring on him and literally just light his body on fire, which is clearly a dirty pile of laundry, but I appreciate the practical effect.
So I do want to say something about this scene, and I'm kind of echoing a sentiment I talked about in our review of episode one.
Okay.
And that I'll probably talk about repeatedly through the entire series. But this scene is another good example of the sort of trivializing of violence, I think.
Yeah.
So think about this scene, actually. Like, okay, you're Mark. You are just living your life. And then suddenly you're in an alley and men with guns are surrounding you. And then they murder you and set your body on fire. This is actually horrific. Okay.
Yeah.
Horrific event. But the scene is like played out in daylight. The alley they're in is like extra wide, it seems like. And the gunfire is like really downplayed. There's no blood. We don't actually see the body burning, not only because it's gross and there's network standards, but because Charm didn't have the money for that sort of shit anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, it's really quite gruesome and awful. And the way it's portrayed to be safe for TV kind of trivializes how awful it is.
I would wager that it's part of the reason that there are people that feel like gun violence is not as big of an issue as it actually is.
Yes, exactly. That's kind of exactly what I'm trying to say. And I feel like stuff like that is the reason why people don't take reports of violence as seriously as they should. Why people are able to do things like mock the victims of gun violence and make fun of people who have been shot to death, you know?
Then we have the opening credits.
Okay, so after the horribly underplayed murder, we're in the kitchen and Piper is putting invitations in envelopes. And I do want to say there's something so compelling about these opening scenes in Charmed when, like, the sisters are just doing, like, mundane things and they set it to, like, really, really good 90s music. And I thought this was, like, a great example of that because I found Piper, you know, just putting invitations into envelopes, like, super interesting. Maybe I just, like...
I mean, yeah, I enjoy seeing them do day-to-day stuff because I feel like it's realistic to real witches. However, what I don't like about this scene is that Piper is putting, like, glitter or something into these envelopes.
Oh, my God.
And... no wonder global warming is an issue when you're wasting all of this, like, material.
Yeah, on a macro level, yeah, glitter is bad for that. But also, like, if you received an invitation with glitter in it, and of course you'd probably, like, drop it over your floor that you, like, just swept. Like, would you want to go to the party afterward? You'd be like, no.
No, I'd be like, fuck you.
Fuck you and your sister's stupid-ass birthday. Whatever. So the point is, Piper is putting invitations together because she's planning a surprise party for Prue's birthday. Okay, so the music fades. Phoebe walks in and she's like, what are you doing? Put the invitations away. Prue's coming. We gotta, like, surprise her with this birthday party that you don't want. And then Piper basically says, you were already supposed to mail these invitations out, you lazy, useless bitch. I can't count on you for anything. And Phoebe is like, we got time. Anyway, it's this whole, like, sister argument thing. And they're like, let's stress again that Phoebe is a fucking screw up.
Phoebe sucks.
And then to cherry on top of the sundae, the Phoebe sucks sundae, Piper massive aggressively brings up how Phoebe sucks at birthday presents. And she always gives a card 3 days late. And then Phoebe's like, well, joke's on you, you exactly right person. I am going to lie about already having bought a gift.
At least Phoebe bothers to get a card. If I don't get somebody a present for something because I forgot, I don't bother.
Yeah, no, once we pass the deadline, it's just like, better save the money.
Like, at least I went to your party. Like, you got me out of my house. That's gift enough.
oh, seriously, my very presence is your gift. Exactly. Okay? And you get it for approximately an hour and 15 minutes, and then I am done.
Prue comes in and says that Andy asked her to go to the spa, and Piper offers some really shady advice to protect her surprise party, and Phoebe's like, no, totes, go and bang him. Stay, but not, like, for a party or anything. And Prue's like, don't throw me a fucking party. And walks out. And here's the thing. Phoebe goes down this, like, full list of how much you have to prepare for a weekend away. And this just goes to show how privileged straight people are. Try bottoming one time. One time! And then tell me how much you need to prepare for a weekend away.
Do you know what I actually got out of that whole thing? Is it's kind of like a patriarchal statement about how, like, to continue to be desirable, women need all these, like, products
with
them in order for a man to continue to want to have sex with her on a sex getaway that he planned, you know?
Yes.
Anyway.
And then Phoebe's got a job interview, so she's got to go. But everything is Phoebe's fault, so.
Yeah. As per usual. So, and she's inspired to do this to buy Prue a present, but it turns into this, like,
whole other thing
that we're going to get into. Okay. So in the next scene, Phoebe is at the Hotel Neptune interviewing to be a psychic in the hotel's lounge. So she's decided that she's going to use her powers to make money to buy Prue a present, which is crazy and awesome.
But, like, how does her power work?
Oh, yeah, for real. This is another one. This episode in particular is the one where her powers are, like, off the rails. Like, later in season 3, so often she will be, like, begging to get a premonition to try to solve the problem. But in this episode, when her powers are brand new, she can basically use them on demand, like, at work.
Do you think she's just, like, to get the job, she's just saying what she thinks that guy wants to hear?
Well, I think that her character is the kind of person who could do that, but every time it's depicted in the episode, it's implied that Phoebe is having premonitions every time she's reading for someone. Mm-hmm.
'Cause here's my thing. I don't know how accurate her reading of the hotel manager was, because that man is a homosexual. Look at his eyebrows. He's got a gay face. That is a homo.
I know, and he, like, manages a hotel. Yeah. Like, what a gay job.
Such a gay job. She was off base, but it got her the job, so.
A hotel, okay. I'm not saying that straight people can't manage hotels, but I'm saying that if you're the manager of a hotel that's named after a planet that employs psychics, you're probably not straight.
And
that's what I
probably
saying.
Had quite the obsession with Sailor Moon.
Okay. All right. I don't know what you're implying. Anyway.
I am recently getting into Sailor Moon, actually, so.
That's because it's awesome, Tyler!
Truly.
So back to Phoebe. So she's applying for a job as a psychic. The manager of the hotel, who is very gay, is suspicious of her abilities, but Phoebe decides to prove herself by touching him and having a premonition, which she narrates with her eyes open, not closed, and not gasping for air like she does every other time she has a premonition, because her powers are off the chain. Okay. So anyway, so she sees him getting caught by his wife while having dinner with another woman, which is peculiar for everyone involved because he's obviously gay. Of course, knowing that her potential boss is cheating on his wife does not bother Phoebe at all. And spoilers, a couple episodes from now, when a woman's cheating on her husband, Phoebe will refuse to work for this woman, which is a sexist double standard.
Yes.
But anyway, the gay manager who is cheating on his wife inexplicably with a woman is like, okay, you totally get me. You're hired.
So Piper and Prue are on the phone talking shit about Phoebe and pretending they're not having a surprise party. Piper sees the ad that Phoebe circled for the hotel psychic position and is like, this dumb bitch. Oh my God, I gotta go fix a problem. Don't tell Prue because at my surprise party that's more important than my sister trying to do a good deed and, you know, maybe going about it the wrong way, but trying to do a good deed.
All right, so next we see Phoebe at the hotel lounge dressed like Barbara Eden in I Dream of Jeannie for God only knows what reason, although it's kind of adorable, actually. Anyway, it's like super cheesy, but also awesome and something I would totally do. Anyway, so Phoebe's doing this psychic reading for this total Karen. I mean, she's got, like, the haircut and the cheekbones and everything. So Phoebe tells her that she's... she has a premonition of her at a Weight Watchers meeting and that she's gained weight, which, is, like, soup's funny, okay? But if you're working as a psychic, don't ever tell your client that they've gotten fat, all right? Because no. It will go down exactly like it does for Phoebe, okay? So Karen flips out and she calls her a fraud and blah, blah, blah. And then immediately after this, Piper shows up and tells Phoebe what a screw-up she is. She says this line, "Our powers are supposed to be a secret, not a marketable job skill."
Ugh. There's nothing wrong with using your abilities to make yourself some money.
Yeah, and anyway, it turns into the charms, like, tired, like, personal gain thing.
Yeah.
So since this is going on in the episode, Tyler and I want to take a moment to talk about whether or not it's ethical to charge people money for readings, you know, whatever kind of readings you're doing. Psychic, runes, tarot cards, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think about that?
Well, personally, I do read tarot semi-professionally. It's not something that I do all the time, but when I do readings for other people, I do charge them. Not, you know, a crazy amount or anything. I just charge for my time, because if I'm going to take the time to do that for you, you know, there are a million other things that I could have been doing in that time frame. So, it's not... necessarily, for me, it's not necessarily about the service that I'm providing, because I understand how people are skeptical of something like that going into it, especially when people are like, I don't know if that's something that I want to pay for. I approach it from a standpoint of like, I am just charging you for my time, and that's just my personal way of doing it. I don't set time limits, I don't set like a number of cards that I'm gonna do. I just let the person know, like, hey, this is how this usually works. This is what the process is. And I'm just charging you to spend the time to do it. What about you?
Some readers market themselves as entertainment, which I think is smart because it kind of puts you in an okay legal area. Because, you know, there are some states where it's a crime to charge money for psychic reading.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Like, still.
That's crazy.
That exists. And in those places, people are only allowed to accept donations, quote unquote, or they have to like market it as something else. And typically what they do is say that it's entertainment. And some of those people who market their readings as entertainment, like really go for it. I was at Pagan Pride one year and I saw this girl who was doing tarot readings and she was dressed up and down fabulous as a fairy. Wings, makeup, dress, everything. And she had the most beautiful fairy tent that she was doing it in. And when she didn't have customers, she would step out of her tent and start singing.
Oh, wow.
She was awesome.
That is who I aspire okay. to be. That is who I aspire yeah. to be.
I did not have time that day to get a reading from her because she was... pretty packed most of the time. So I don't know what her reading skills were like, but if someone's gonna go through all of that costuming and set dressing and efforts and then take like half an hour to just talk about you with you, I think it's perfectly okay to charge. I mean, that chick had it going on. And I've seen other people like that. She's just the best example that I can come up with. But I also think, you know, a lot of readers have taken a lot of time to learn their craft and skills, whatever they may be. If you're an off-book tarot reader, trust that you have put in some study time, okay? If you know the meanings of, like, your cards or the runes or whatever, there's some definite actual skill cultivated there. And also, just a lot of people who do readings of all kinds are genuinely putting in effort to try and help you, and it's effort that can make you tired, you know. So like, again, it's a service, whether you personally believe it's helpful or not. Most of these people are trying to help their clients, and that's why I think that it's perfectly ethical to make money doing readings.
Yeah, absolutely, I would agree. There are, you know, there are some things to look out for.
That being said, there are totally frauds out there.
Yeah, there are definitely people that will take advantage of people seeking guidance for their own personal gain. Personal gain. I have noticed that typically readers that don't enjoy being challenged on anything, like if they're off base on what they're trying to tell you, will not be somebody that you want to work with, whether or not they're legitimately psychic or not. That's not just not something that I want my energy tapped into.
Right, because they're trying to prove themselves right, not help you.
Yeah, exactly.
And the point of a reading is to help the client.
Mm-hmm. Yes, period. Absolutely, period. And like, I personally, and there's a really fine line when talking about like pricing of a reading. And you really just have to think about the quality of service and how you feel about what you're paying for. Just do your research on like reviews and stuff. If something's like kind of high priced and you're nervous about it, just look into it, you know, see what other people have said, see what their experiences are. Because there are some people that do this full time and depend on the income. Those people will typically charge a lot more than somebody like me, for example, who just does it on the side and charges $20 for however long it takes. So there's a lot that goes into it. Just be careful and do your research on who you're booking with to make sure that other people have had good experiences there.
When I was, I want to say 11 or 12, my best friend's mom took me with them to a psychic fair. It was really cool.
Oh.
It was totes cool. I don't know if they still do them around here anymore. But anyway, so I actually met a fraud at this place too. There was this guy who claimed to be a medium, and I am pretty suspicious of people who claim to communicate with the dead for money. I'm pretty suspicious of them, I'll be honest. You know, if you're out there and you do that, I'm not attacking you personally. This is just my own personal experience, because I have talked with a lot of people who've had similar experiences to the one I'm about to describe. But basically, I gave this guy my grandfather's ring because I had it with me, and I was just kind of curious. I didn't really need to talk to my grandpa about anything, but I was just like, okay, I've never met a medium before, let's try it. And this guy kept trying to describe my grandfather to me, and he kept being wrong. And then whenever I would say, no, that's not right, he would just correct himself until I said, that's right. And even at 12 years old, I was like, okay, this guy has no fucking clue what he's talking about.
I have had one mediumship reading before. She was recommended to me from a friend who was a skeptic, and they were dating at the time when, you know, he experienced what her gifts were. Her name is Chloe. If you're listening to this, hi, Chloe. I'm hyping you up here. She was really great. She was really great. She connected me with my parents, and it was very kind of on the up and up to what I would have expected it to be like. The way that she described what my parents were doing was pretty accurate. She confirmed a lot of things for me. If it's something that helps you, awesome. Go for it. Just, you know, be careful. As Siren said, there are some people out there that will
just tell you what they think you want to hear.
So the thing about the tarot is, like, it's never going to tell you something that you don't already know. It's just going to tell you something that you maybe don't want to think about.
And actually, my experience of reading tarot is that I'm usually going to tell you exactly what you don't fucking want to hear, but it's also true and you know it. So anyway, okay, I know we need to get back to the episode, but I didn't even finish my story. So, okay, so I'm at the psychic fair, and I go to this tarot reader,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sitting with her, and she's just kind of talking to me about my life, and then, I swear to God, there were, like, spirits or something, like, sitting on her shoulders and whispering in her ear or something. That's kind of the way she acted. She was really super accurate, and I feel like halfway through the conversation, she just wasn't even looking at the cards anymore. And she kept telling me things that were, like, really specific and true. But anyway, at one point, she was talking to me, and she was like, there's a girl that you like. No. Wait. And then she, like, it was like she perked up her ear to listen to some invisible thing on her shoulder. And then she looked at me and she said, it's not girls that you like, is it? And listen, bitch, I was 12, okay? And yeah, I was kind of sort of suspecting that, yes, it was not girls that I liked. But I hadn't come to terms with that, and I certainly wasn't ready to talk about it in a crowded convention hall, okay? And so I very angrily was like, yes, it is girls that I like.
And did you say it like that? Because it was not convincing.
Probably like super gay, like everything else I've ever done in my whole life. And then this tarot reader, she like, with her hand, she like brushed this invisible being off her shoulder. And she said to it, she said to this invisible thing on her shoulder, she said, he's not ready to talk about that
yet. Oh my God.
And it's really funny now.
I bet it was super traumatic then.
But, like, then I was like, fuck this. This sucks. Anyway.
Okay, let's move on. Mark shows up looking for a psychic and is surprised that Piper and Phoebe can both see him. But they're like, we don't have time for you. Get the fuck out of here. And Mark says that he's tried communicating with every psychic in the city and none of them can see him, basically saying that they're all frauds. But psychic power does not go hand in hand with the ability to see spirits, just so we all know.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that was just kind of a note that I put in there. That's how I took it when he said, I've been to every psychic in the city and none of them could see me. That the way I interpreted that was Charm's little way of saying that only our magical witches really have power.
Yeah, and exactly. Anyway, that's how it's implied. I don't want anybody listening to get discouraged if they're trying to practice like clairvoyance, anything of that nature. I don't want them to be discouraged because they can't necessarily physically see something, you know?
Yeah, let's just make a blanket statement and say that we don't want to discourage you from really anything in your journey as a witch, period. Yes, ever.
100%.
Never ever.
Speak that truth, yes. Yeah. And then Phoebe's boss is like, you need to be working and making some money. Piper's like, okay, fine, do whatever you want, I'm leaving. And then Mark stalks her out of the hotel.
Yeah, so Piper's been sort of a judgmental bitch in this episode so far. But we still really like her. So Piper leaves the hotel. The ghost Mark is following her, attempting to tell her that he was murdered. Piper can't tell that he's a ghost. He just looks like a normal person to her. So she thinks that he's a crazy drunk who's harassing her. But then a biker drives through Mark, and then Piper realizes, oh, he actually is a ghost. Okay, so this next scene with Prue, let's just, like, skate right through it, because I can't stress this enough that her story is annoying.
Okay, Prue goes into Quake for no reason, and sees Andy cozying up to another woman, and Prue is like, I couldn't get a hold of you, and you're... police buddies told me that you might be here, and this woman introduces herself as Susan Trudeau, and Prue is like, are you Andy's sister? And here's my question. They've been friends with Andy since they were, like, children.
Yes! I know.
How did she not know that he didn't have a sister?
I always hated that part. She's like, I literally dated you in high school. Do you have a sister I never found out about, even though we would have went to the same high school?
Right? You think she would have known. She would have known that. And then Susan says, no, I'm his wife. And Andy is like, whoa, 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 whoa. No, you're not. You're my ex-wife. And Prue is like, fuck this shit, I'm out. And Andy follows her. Andy follows her. And she throws a dessert cart at him, which is another instance of Prue taking things just a little bit
Just a little too far.
A little too far.
Just a little too far.
Absolutely no reason for that, Prue. That whole thing is just, the whole plot in this episode, with, as you've said many a times already, it's annoying. The Prue and Andy thing is annoying. Piper and Mark are walking down an alley and talking about Yama and the gates of hell. And Mark says that Yama doesn't care about how a person had acted in life, and he just wants to take souls to hell. Mark is really remorseful about not listening to his mother, who Siren has again indicated in her notes is attractive.
She is.
And then
she's a total MILF.
Then they find Mark's charred corpse. I really think that Charm needs to apologize to Macy's for what they did to this mannequin. But Yama shows up. Yama shows up and is astride a black horse with this big spear and this really fucking rad horned helmet that I wish I had. And Piper freezes Yama. So apparently she is able to freeze God.
Just this one.
But I want to take a moment to discuss the actual mythology of Yama here. This is from an article on Ancient History Encyclopedia by Mark Curtwright that was published in July 2015. Yama is the Hindu god of death. king of ancestors and the final judge on the destination of souls. He is known as the Restrainer, or Pretaraja, king of ghosts, Dharmaraja, or king of justice, and is considered the regent of the South Quarter. Yama may also be referred to simply as Death, due to his responsibility for good decision-making based on the records of a person's deeds. There's a little misrepresentation there for you. The god is particularly associated with the rule of law. Yama is also present in Iranian mythology, traditional Chinese and Japanese mythology, and elements of Buddhism. As we talked about earlier, throughout Eastern cultures, there's a lot of different religions and cultural things that take place in different areas. And I've noticed that there's a lot of overlap in their religious mythos some of the time. But what I could find in my admittedly quick Google search, there's nothing in any of his myths that suggest he doesn't care if a soul is good or evil.
Right. That was the big way that they missed the mark on depicting Yama in this episode.
Yeah. It's one of those instances where it's like, it's not Christian, so it's bad.
Basically. So I think that it's what happens to Yama in this episode is similar to what happened when Disney got a hold of Greek mythology and made Hades the bad guy. Westerners have a particular fear of death, and they don't see God as a god of death, even though he like lets you into heaven and the afterlife. Mm-hmm. We see the devil as the god of death and God as like life. So when we see gods of death in other cultures, Westerners tend to think, oh, okay, that's the equivalent of the devil. And that's not really true at all. So I feel like what happens here is that Yama, a god of death in Hinduism and Buddhism, has been turned into the evil character because of our westernized fear of death, and not so much what he actually represents as a death god in his own culture.
Right. And I feel like anything being the equivalent of the devil in relation to another culture or another religion in general is not okay to do, because that's a very specific religious figure that really only exists right. in the binary of Christianity and is only regarded as literally existing, to my knowledge, in the religion of Christianity.
So I do want to touch back on something I mentioned earlier, which is that, you know, there are several religions throughout Asia that are very different, but it can be confusing sometimes to people who aren't used to it or didn't grow up in it, because the same mythological characters can have very different existences in different religions, even if they go by the same name.
Yeah.
So that's why we have a lot of information on Yama here. But unfortunately, none of it really meshes up with how he's depicted in this episode. I do think that they gave it their all with the way that he looks.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, Yama he sits astride a buffalo, he holds a noose and a sword, and he has four arms. Now, in the show, he has the helmet and the spear, and he's on a black horse. I'm going to forgive the horse thing, because it's just pretty unrealistic to expect them to film with a water buffalo on set in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I don't know how they could make that work.
I understood the way that they depicted him visually, because, you know, there was only so much they could do with their budget.
I've also decided to forgive that he has a spear instead of a noose. And I think it was, again, probably more because of, like, things to do with filming. Spoilers. Toward the end, somebody gets skewered on that spear of Yama's. And I think that just filming, it would have been a lot less effective to attempt to have this, like, stock actor astride the horse actually, you know, get the noose around someone as opposed to just like stick them with a spear.
I also feel like that would have been just like a lot darker.
Oh,
to
yeah.
To have a noose like that would have, I don't feel that like.
For sure.
Charmed.
For sure.
Charmed is typically a little bit more lighthearted than some of the other supernatural dramas that we're accustomed to.
Yeah. Oh, it absolutely
I feel like that direction would have been too much for, especially for episode 4, for what they were trying to do.
Charmed, honestly, is really the fluffy bunny of supernatural dramas.
Kinda, yeah.
even when dark, awful things happen, they always portray it in such a way that it's more palatable to the audience.
It's kind of camp at points.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It really
especially
is.
Later when people die and they just like there's no blood or anything, they just get a little.
Everyone dies quick and painless on Charmed, so honestly when I die I think I want to die on Charmed.
I want to die like a background extra on Charmed.
Yeah, I just want to burst into flames and be done with it. So I did want to touch on something else. So the whole conflict here, of course, is that Mark has died. He's a ghost. He is now worried that because no one knows where his body is, that he will not receive a proper burial. And apparently a proper Chinese funeral is the only thing that can save him from being gobbled up by Yama, the misrepresented Hindu death god. Mark also says that there's something going on that he calls Dahoy, which I could not find a direct translation for. I'm soups, sorry. But he says it translates to when the gates of hell open. And apparently, the gates of hell open just specifically for Mark's birthday so that Yama could come out and take his soul to hell for no reason. So I did look up the gates of hell in Chinese tradition, and I found what I think is super interesting. There is actually a Chinese festival called the Gates of Hell. And they believe that the gates of hell are open for the entire seventh lunar month of the year. And hell isn't really like negative, awful place, though. It's more like the underworld in this context. Mm-hmm. So they believe that during this month that all kinds of spirits can come out of the afterlife or the underworld and be present in the living world again. It's a very common time for ancestor worship, although they do also have some like superstitions about mischievous spirits and things that can go on during this month. But overall, the Gates of Hell festival in China is very similar to the Mexican Day of the Dead or the pagan Samhain. Again, while the Gates of Hell opening is being misrepresented in the episode that we're watching, it's actually a really cool thing to know about.
Also, like, hell kind of gets misrepresented a lot. Not that I believe in hell as a real place, because I don't. But I feel like anything that's not heaven associated in the afterlife to Westerners or Christians in general is always hell or bad. Mm-hmm. Or something that's not good. Not a good place to go. And it's just kind of not true.
Well, this is another way that Western culture misidentifies things. So in Christianity, there's this kind of directional mythos that heaven is up above us and hell is below us. A lot of other religions, though, the entire underworld, good, evil, everyone, whatever, is below us. So like when other religions talk about the underworld, Christians are like, oh, only hell is down there. But that's not how a lot of the rest of the world sees it.
Exactly. And it's just an example of this particular instance, bringing it into this episode of Charmed. It's just an example of how everything is fair game except for Christianity. Everything else can be toyed with and changed and manipulated into something else as long as it's not Christianity.
I mean, I honestly think that's more true of all of Western media rather than just Charmed, except for Supernatural. Oh my
god, I wrote the same note.
Is blasphemous as fuck, and I love it.
Except for their portrayal of witches.
Oh yeah, so, you know, we'll get into that later. Back at the house, Prue is pissed off about her own stupid drama lame ass story. she knows about the surprise party, and she's mad, and Piper and Phoebe are like, girl, what is your problem? This scene is slightly uncomfortable in a way that doesn't make any sense. I think it was supposed to be a joke and it completely failed in every way. Mark shows up and Prue is mad because she's only wearing a towel. I watched this scene a couple of times to try to figure out what's happening here. So I don't think it's like this later, but the bathroom that Prue is walking out of is like directly in front of the front door. Is the way it's framed.
It's like tucked under the staircase, kind of. It's like she comes out of this open door, and then the front door is like right there.
So Prue is like standing outside of the bathroom wearing nothing in front of her front door, and she gets mad that someone's looking at her.
that bathroom is 100% a closet later. And that really, like, depreciates the value of your home to get rid of a bathroom. I know, because I watch a lot of House Hunters.
Yeah.
And they really should not have done that. But also, one thing that I want to talk about is how Shannon Doherty says naked.
Naked.
Hello, I'm practically naked here. But yes, you're right. It's just really awkward.
It's a super awkward scene, and it should not have ever been in there.
No. And then Piper wastes a perfectly good mug.
Oh, yeah. So to prove that Mark is a ghost, Piper throws a mug through him. Why would she be carrying that mug around if it was empty? So my understanding is that she threw a mug full of hot tea through him so that it could crash on the ground and splash tea everywhere. And that is just poor housekeeping is what that is.
It really triggered me because I collect, like, novelty mugs.
Oh my God, I would kill a bitch if they broke my mug just to prove that someone is a ghost. Like, just fucking talk to me like an adult, you know? I would
never do that. Just go up and, like, poke him. Stick your hand through them. Do something. Don't break my mugs, bitch. Okay. The sisters talk about whether or not they're going to help Mark and how, what they're going to do.
And it's kind of, I feel like this was weird to include because Phoebe and Prue are kind of like, well, how do we know we're supposed to help him? Maybe he belongs in hell. And then Piper is just like, well, we can see him, which means he's good. And then Prue and Phoebe are just like, what an excellent point, Piper. So, yeah.
I feel as though Piper is off base and the other two kind of have a point. Because later on, when they see a ghost, it's not good.
I know. And that's why I bring it up. Because later in this episode, they see another ghost. And it wasn't because they were supposed to help him.
No, not at all. So yeah, that point's a little off base. Piper says she's gonna go talk to Mark's mother.
Attractive again. Mother.
Noted as attractive. Phoebe takes a phone call in the middle of this really important conversation and she has to go to work. Prue makes everything all about her and explains that Andy made a huge mistake by not telling her he had an ex-wife before they had sex, which doesn't make any sense. That's insane troll logic.
Troll logic. It is. That's why I'm so mad at Prue in this episode, because she's like, I'm going to take this situation and I'm going to just string a bunch of random points together and act like it makes me right. And, well, okay, so again, actually, I realize as I was saying that sentence that I was describing the way that I treat everyone in my life all the time. damn it. I don't have a point.
You are Prue Hallowell.
I am. So we're going back to the hotel, and Phoebe's boss is encouraging her to give a good reading to an important client. And instead of paying attention, Phoebe is looking at this just complete, like, boring-looking white dude at the bar. And he leaves his wallet behind, and Phoebe's like, oh, no, I'd better go and be a good Samaritan and give him his wallet back. But instead, she picks it up and she has a premonition that the man will get hit by a car.
Another instance where she has a vision of someone getting hit by something that happened in the first episode, too.
It did. Yeah. I mean, it's San Francisco. I'm sure people get hit by other things a lot. There's all sorts of, like, moving bikes and vehicles.
At the house, Mark is upset. Because he can't turn on the TV. Relatable content, Mark.
I know, right?
Piper brings him some blankets in a total, like, mom friend sort of way, which he doesn't need because he's dead. But, you know, Piper just really likes to care for the dead.
Yeah, care for. I know what you're saying.
Mark has a rather, like, poignant monologue about the things that he'll miss about being alive, and the episode really has an uptick at this point. It starts to get a lot better.
Yeah, definitely. Well, this is when the, like, romance starts, and it's actually just really well done. I kind of love Mark's, like, speech about what he'll miss in life, though, because he, like, just highlights these, like, base physical things, you know, like oysters, and I forget everything else because I just focus on food. But the point is that he makes a list of, like, basic things that we might take for granted. And then now that he's dead and he'll never do them again, they seem really important. And that might be kind of a cliche at this point, But I don't know if it was when this episode aired, and I just think it's a really good speech.
You know, as we said in our premiere episode, there were a lot of things that were more innovative
than they are now.
Cooking is what they really start to bond over. Mark mentions that his mom used to cook, and Piper gets very excited about the relatable. And then they start to bond, and then Piper's like, am I a necrophiliac? Or... but it is very sweet. They start to really bond over the food, and it's a cute story. It really is.
It is. Do you know what? I'm going to assert that perhaps, rather than being a necrophiliac, maybe Piper is just really turned on by food. Okay, in episode one, her warlock boyfriend is like, hot dogs, hamburgers, and Piper's like, swoon. And then in this episode, Mark is like, Peking duck, and Piper's like, swoon.
You might be right. Maybe it is food.
You know, I'm just saying. And that is soups relatable.
Honestly, Phoebe confronts Mr. Corey, this man whose wallet she found and had the premonition.
Yeah, the boring white guy. His name's Mr. Corey.
Phoebe confronts this boring white man about how he's gonna die, and this is just not the way that you should do this at all. Not at all. No,
she doesn't handle it well.
She's got some room to grow in being tactful about her visions. But it turns out Mr. Corey's wife is the Weight Watchers Karen, so that really, you know, works in her favor. For sure, 100%. It's great. It's great. Great news.
Yeah, so, okay, lesson number two. If you are a budding psychic reader, the first lesson being, don't tell your client that they've gotten fat. Lesson two, also don't tell your client that they're about to die.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah. This is good advice. Learn from Phoebe's mistakes.
Don't tell your clients that they're about to die.
All right. So back at Buckland's, where Prue works, she is continuing to behave like a child. Andy sent her flowers, and she's mad about that. She explains why she's mad with her insane troll logic. Like, you should have told me about your ex-wife, who is deeply problematic and toxic and probably still manipulating you, but I can't see that because I'm too wrapped up in my own shit. And Andy's like, well, I'm sorry. And then Prue's like, well, I'm still mad. And then Andy says, why are you trying to turn this into something it's not? And every single viewer is like, seriously, bitch, what is this?
Her life has just gotten so complicated, Siren.
It's so complicated.
Her life is so complicated.
It's so complicated, and I just need a reason to be mad.
Piper goes to see Mark's mom, and Mark speaks Chinese to her so she can repeat it back to Mark's mom to allow for, like, a bond of trust. But his mom doesn't know that he's dead. The police have not informed Mark's mother of his death. And Mark is like, tell her that I'm fucking dead. And Piper's like, I can't do that. Which is understandable. Like,
awkward.
I would not do that either. I would not be like, hey, guess what? Your son got shot and burned up in an alley. See you later. Bye. No, of course she didn't do that. They found another way, and it was the better way overall, despite some of the consequences. Piper's like, you know, if I hear from him, I'll let you know the way that she should have handled the situation. And his mother goes inside, and Mark tries to go inside, but the little amulet prevents him from entering.
Yes, the second time that we see the Qilin amulet, which we talked about earlier, it actually magically repels Mark, has this kind of little light effect, and throws him away from the house.
The effects in this episode actually do look pretty good, I will say, overall. They're not so Adobe After Effects-y.
Yeah, well, and nobody had, like, a pointless bad transformation for no reason, so there was that.
Exactly. Back at home, Prue is cleaning and...
still being a bitch. Like,
being just awful.
Ugh.
And then Phoebe, like, helps clean, and Prue is like, what is going on with you? And Phoebe tells her about the vision. And Prue is like, you've gotta protect this boring white man. You have to do it.
Because white lives matter, Phoebe.
The world needs more of those.
Seriously. Do you know, I think, you know, I wasn't going to go there, but now I will. If I'd had a premonition that that douchey rich guy was going to die anyway, I probably just would have kept his wallet and called it a day.
Okay, next scene. Next scene.
Eat the rich. Okay. Piper and Mark come home, turn on the TV, and find that Mark's body has been misidentified as Tony Wong, the head of the Chinatown Triad. Now, Tony Wong would be the guy who killed him in the first place and planted the ring on him, using him to fake his own death. That's the whole point of this whole thing. And suddenly we're caught up to speed. Okay. Phoebe, for absolutely no reason, has a premonition of Tony Wong with a logo behind him. And also this premonition is just a reused scene of him talking from a later scene that's about to come up. I don't know if you noticed that.
I didn't, but I mean, it works out for it being a vision of the future.
I'll point it out when we get there.
Okay.
Okay. So, Phoebe just has a premonition for no reason. And suddenly she can decipher Chinese characters. And so she, well, maybe not decipher, but I'm sorry. If I just had a flash of a couple Chinese symbols and then was told to write them down, I don't think that I could do it. But apparently Phoebe can. So she writes them down. And then Mark translates them and identifies that Tony Wong is camped out in a warehouse. And Prue magically deduces that Wong used Mark to fake his own death. She just, like, knows all the details. She thought of it in her spare time when she was doing nothing else but being mad at Andy for no reason.
Can we talk about how Prue is like, I don't remember the exact conversation, but she's like, you look a lot like him.
And he doesn't.
He does not. It
doesn't.
It's kind of racist, right?
Racism. No, it was totally racist. It was totally racist. They looked nothing alike, mm-hmm. other than the fact that they were both Asian. I wouldn't even say with certainty that they were both Chinese.
Right.
So yeah, that was definitely racist. Definitely.
That's super racist. Mark and Piper go to this warehouse by themselves.
Yeah. Oh, this sucks. Okay, so I know they're new at being the charmed ones, but, like, at what point is it like, oh, we need to face off with a dangerous criminal? Maybe just one of us can go alone.
It makes no sense.
I know. Like, Piper's like, okay, I have to go fight this crime lord. And Phoebe's like, oh, sorry, I have to go save a rich white guy. And then
Prue is like, I have to be pissed off at my boyfriend.
Oh, sorry, I have to be pissed at my boyfriend.
But to be fair, I mean, I don't want to be fair to the other sisters because they suck in this episode, but Piper's power is the best for handling what they're trying to do. But that doesn't mean she should have gone by herself. Yeah, so she freezes Wong when they go in and takes a picture of him holding a newspaper with the headline that he's been found murdered. And then she goes to drop off that photograph at the police station and bumps into Andy. It's very much the equivalent of like, hey, can you talk to your sister and get her to go out with me, please?
Basically.
Yeah.
The thing I thought was kind of funny about this scene is that Andy walks up on Piper apparently talking to herself, even though she's talking to Mark, and then Piper's like, wow, you just made this really lame because I'm actually talking to my dead boyfriend.
And she's, when he walks up to her, she's clearly having a conversation with someone else, like responding to things that no one has said. Whatever, we'll go with it.
Whatever.
White people, it's fine. Moving on.
So Piper gives Andy the actual good advice of backing the hell off of Prue, because she's made it pretty clear that she needs him to back the hell off.
She wants some space. She wants some space.
And then Andy leaves, and Mark tells Piper that she's a really sweet person. He wants to take her back to his place.
Better not be that fucking elevator from the first episode. Jesus Christ. Piper, again, with the secondary locations.
I know. Again. She did do that.
Again.
She did not learn.
This time it's a little better, I guess, because, you know, what can he really do? But still.
All right, so we're cutting back to the hotel, and Phoebe is completely failing to warn Mr. Corey that he's going to die again. It just sounds like stalking and threatening. Like, I would run from that bitch, too. And, you know, quite honestly, do you think that maybe it's her behavior that makes him rush out into the street in front of that car?
I literally made that note, yeah. It's like, if she had just left him the fuck alone, he probably would have gotten across the street in time.
Fine.
He would have gotten across that street just fine. She was the reason he was so flustered and dropped his briefcase in the middle of the street. It was her fault.
Oh my god. It's all her fault.
Everything is Phoebe's fault.
She's such a screw up. So really, everything would have been better for everyone if she would have just stolen his wallet.
Right? If she had just taken his wallet and bought Prue's gift with that, there would have been no problem. He would have been fine.
All right,
he would have lived.
Moral lesson of the day, if you find someone's lost wallet, the right thing to do is just keep it. It could save lives!
It could. Oh, stealing a wallet saves lives. Especially if it's a rich white guy's wallet.
Yeah, it could save lots of lives. So what happens is that Mr. Corey drops his briefcase in the street because Phoebe's really upset him. And Phoebe tackles him out of the way of a moving car, saving his life. His wife, Karen, inexplicably shows up, where I'm assuming she was just watching, waiting for him to die.
She was at a Weight Watchers meeting across the street.
Or perhaps driving the car. Who knows? She inexplicably shows up, and then Phoebe's like, that'll be $20. Tip not included. Charging people for saving lives. Which she just really, like, no matter how this turned out, she just really wanted some fucking money.
Piper and Mark go to Mark's apartment, and Paula Cole sets the mood. My note was, who is Paula Cole? But we have talked about that already.
I love Paula Cole. She's so this time period. She's so late 90s. And it's a really beautiful song by hers that plays through this whole scene. Okay, it really is.
Piper reads a really romantic Camus quote. After that, Mark gives her all of his family recipes. And Mark tells Piper to make sure Prue celebrates her birthday. I love birthdays, and I think they're actually really powerful days for witchcraft, and I want to talk about why.
Yeah, let's do it.
Witchcraft, in my opinion, should be about personal growth. It should be about developing yourself and pushing yourself to be an empowered person and a well-rounded person. Birthdays are a really good day to take stock of yourself, to analyze yourself and your behaviors and decide what you want to take forward with you into your next year of life, what you want to leave behind. And that could be, you know, stuff about yourself or other areas of your life, things that you want to grow away from, people you want to grow away from. I feel like it's just a really empowering day for self-reflection, and there can't be any growth without self-reflection. You have to be able to look at yourself too before you can make positive changes.
I think that's really great. I love it. That actually astrologically makes sense too. This doesn't always line up perfectly, but in theory, your birthday is the date of your solar return, basically where the sun is in the same sign in the same place as it was when you were born. The sun is all about growth. I mean, it represents other things, but it represents growth and power. So in theory, astrologically, your birthday should also be a great day for growth and power.
Witches, especially newer witches, have a tendency to focus on honoring and venerating other things. Nature, gods and goddesses, the elements, whatever it is that you personally work with. Your birthday is a really great day to honor and venerate yourself, because that's important too.
I love that. I love everything you just said. Back at the manor, Phoebe is bragging to Prue about wasting her time saving that one percenter. Prue finally clues in to what everyone else has been thinking about her for the past half hour, which is that she's being kind of a twat to Andy.
Yeah.
And she needs to get over it. But then she gets all, like, super negative about it, which is also kind of annoying. And she basically says that she has to keep secrets from Andy all the time because she's a witch. Because God forbid anyone ever know that you're a witch and accept it and love you anyway. It seems impossible.
Right.
So anyway, so Prue's like, maybe I should just give up. And Phoebe says, no, you should get over your annoying ass self and call him. And she has this quote, which I kind of like. It's a little simplistic and it could be taken the wrong way, but I still like it. She says, give to get. That is the secret of life, not our powers. I think it's a great quote for her overall kind of personality.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's a very Gemini thing to say, even though
yeah.
as a Gemini, that is something that I would say. It's nice. And if you believe in the concept of karma, if that's something that you adhere to or think about, or, you know, the rule of three, which I know is like a big to-do in the community, but it kind of lines up with that. It's like what you put out is what you're going to get back. And I feel like that's very on point with Prue's storyline in this episode. Like, she's keeping secrets and then Andy kept a secret. And so she felt a certain type of way about it because of her own actions. Piper and Mark come home and are having a romantic talk about the stars.
Okay. So it's really great. It's probably the best scene in the whole episode for me. You know, so they were just having this romantic moment at Mark's apartment. And now they've come back to Piper's house, and Mark is, like, super into her. It's obvious. And I think he asks her, where were you my whole life?
Yeah.
I love this moment so much, because Piper wants to imitate a way that they are, like, touching, I guess, because she can't actually touch him, because he's a ghost. She tells him to close his eyes, And she describes what it would feel like if she could touch him, her hand on his face. It's both meaningful and incredibly erotic, in my opinion, which is really quite amazing considering that they're fully clothed, just talking, not even actually touching each other. I love this scene. This scene, for me, is why the episode is so good. It's the crux of it, really. This ghost love story that culminates in an act of intimacy with no touching. There are so many meaningful ways that you could take this. You know, first of all, the fact that love, while different, can survive beyond death just by talking about or even to the person that you've lost. I also think it's a pretty powerful statement about asexuality. Acts of great intimacy and love don't have to actually be like sexual intercourse. It's a great scene.
Tony Wong's men
fucking ruin it.
Boner killers just seriously bust in. It's Tony Wong, the boner slayer.
Ghost boner slayer.
Ghost boner slayer.
So I guess now what I'm thinking is, Mark's a ghost. Does ghost Mark have a ghost boner?
I mean, I don't see why not. There's a scene in Scary Movie 2 where a girl has sex with a ghost.
Listeners, here's the thing. Tyler and I badly need to know. If any of you out there are experts on ghost anatomy, we really have questions about spectral penises and otherworldly erections.
If you have any information on spectral penises or ectoplasmic ejaculation, please send us an email.
I will literally just be staring at the inbox until it gets there.
Please and thank you. Tony Wong's men kill the mood and kidnap Piper, which is really scary. And Mark is like, oh my god, please help. And thank god he's in the house of these, like, magical witches because they can actually hear him and nobody else can. And they're like, oh no.
Phoebe and Prue are literally too wrapped up in their own bullshit to realize Piper's getting kidnapped.
Right? And they attempt to follow, claiming they'll call 911 on the way.
Okay, so here's enough. Like, this is ridiculous. This is an example of Charmed being, like, campy and, like, not depicting, like, actual violence at all. The gangsters have Piper just barely tied up. And they're talking to her. And by the way, this is the scene that they also used for Phoebe's premonition. It's exactly the same shot and everything.
Oh my god. I feel like the reason they kept her alive was to try to figure out who she told.
Right.
You know, so they could, like, nip it in the bud.
I'm not, like, a, like, crime boss mastermind or anything, but I would just think, I don't have time to fuck around with this bitch. So I'm either gonna, like, kill her or not kill her, and either way, I gotta go, you know?
Yeah. I gotta get the,
like, I've been done, found out. But instead, he's like, what if we go back to the same room where I know she photographed me? You know?
Yeah.
And what if we just have a leisurely conversation?
About everything that I plan to do.
Yeah. Precisely. Oh, it was so, like, villain monologuing, too.
It really was. But it gave Andy time to find the photo that she hid a little too well in his mailbox.
Oh, I know. Like, does he ever clean his desk? Jesus.
Yeah, that shit was a mess. But he's like, oh, shit, there's that guy. Better rush down to the only place that I know where he is.
Okay, let's talk about this particular aspect, though. Andy finds the photo Piper took, and it's a photo of Tony Wong holding a newspaper that says that he's been found dead. That may have seemed like a hot clue in 1998, but, like, Photoshop exists now.
Yeah. Okay?
So, like, if that piece of evidence found its way into a police station, that would so not be taken seriously.
No.
Mm-mm. Andy sees it and he's like, oh fuck, you know, get the cavalry, we gotta go, we gotta shoot up Chinatown. But like, now they would just be like, oh, someone photoshopped this, it's a meme, it's all over the internet, it'll be forgotten tomorrow. Yeah, it'll just be like a photo of Tony Wong holding a can of twisted tea or something.
Definitely another example of things being more innovative in 98 than they are in 2021.
So I just wanted to throw that out as an example of how the show doesn't always hold up in like the modern era.
Not always. But Prue and Phoebe barge into the warehouse, and Phoebe maybe shouldn't have done that because she doesn't have a helpful power in the situation. Piper somehow unties her hands and freezes everything just in time to keep Prue from getting shot in the face.
Yeah, again, so like I just can't take these gangsters seriously if Piper can free her own hands. You know, like, yeah. Really, once she did that, like, Prue didn't even need to be there to rescue her anymore because she could just freeze them and like walk away.
Piper has the best and most effective power, and I will fight that. I will argue that point until the day I die with anybody that tries to argue with me, because it's the best. It's the best power.
Prue throws Tony Wong down the stairs, and then he, like, runs away, and Andy and the rest of the entire precinct
all
show up.
They're all there.
And at the slightest provocation, I'm just kidding, it's not really like that. They, you know, they try to take Tony Wong in peacefully, because that's what cops always do, regardless of the situation. And then when he raises his gun, they shoot the fuck out of him dead.
This scene didn't age well. I'll say that.
No.
It didn't age well. I understand why it's in there. I understand the furthering of the plot. But watching it from a 2021 perspective is uncomfortable.
Oh, definitely.
And I don't want to give it necessarily a free pass, because police violence has always been a thing.
Well, okay, so I think that the things that were done in this episode, this is probably the lowest point of this episode, is because it furthers a narrative that teaches people that police violence is okay. So we've watched Tony Wong be nothing but a villainous caricature the entire episode, who murders people for stupid reasons. And we're told that he is a crime boss. And so then when he gets shot by the police, who he threatened with his gun first, of course, then the whole thing is very neatly tied up as perfectly justified.
Yeah.
So we see that and we're like, oh, okay, so this means that whenever police shoot people dead, they deserved it. Like, that's the message that we're actually consuming here.
Mm-hmm. And it's very clear, you know, in our current climate that that is
not true.
It's not true, and it's always what people have taken away from a situation like that. Well, if the cops did it, then there must have been a reason, and it's all good and fine. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I have issues with that. That is, in my opinion, the lowest point of this episode as well. Wong gets his comeuppance two times over, because the sisters and Mark meet his ghost, and Yama shows up. And Piper is like, you're not taking Mark, but you can have this guy. And Mark gets this moment where he's like, make a wish, bitch, or something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that. Make a wish, bitch.
And like pushes him onto Yama's spear, and he gets absorbed into the phallic symbol.
Yeah, so not only does Wong get righteously murdered by the police, but now he is going to hell forever.
And Piper is like, you can't take Mark, back the fuck off. And Yama's like, okay, cool, bye.
And see, this actually I think was probably kind of the actual climax of the story, even though it was so like understated. But because when Piper first meets Yama, she is afraid of him, she freezes him, and then she immediately says that she can only do that because she's afraid of him, and then they run away. But now we've gone through a journey. Piper has feelings for Mark, and so she's brave enough to not even use her powers, but to put her body in between them to save him.
Mm-hmm.
And we've mostly seen that Piper is maybe a little bit bitchy sometimes, but mostly she's the awkward middle sister who's nervous all the time. But she's grown such feelings for the ghost through this episode that she puts her life on the line to save him. And I actually think it was a very good moment for her character and a very good end to their love story.
Yeah, Piper is my favorite character. And she's always been my favorite character when I was younger.
Mine too.
When I was younger, it's because her power was the best. But I honestly just feel like she's the most interesting, the most well-developed, and just played amazingly by Holly Marie Combs.
Yeah, Holly Marie Combs is a fantastic actress, hands down. I think, and it obviously becomes a little different as the series progresses, but especially right now, I think Phoebe and Prue represent different versions of women who we all kind of wish we could be. Mm-hmm. But Piper is more realistic, more relatable.
Yeah, I can agree with that. After that, we go to Mark's extremely Western funeral, and I know that you have some thoughts and opinions about that, yes?
I do. I have comments. Because through the entire episode, it was stressed that Mark needs a proper Chinese burial to save him from Yama. Which also, I think, is stupid anyway. It smacks of this belief that, like, your immortal soul can be affected by things that happen on Earth. I just don't believe that the state of your body after you die has any bearing on your afterlife. I think that's stupid. But anyway, that's not the point here. The point is that it was stressed that Mark needs a proper Chinese burial and funeral in order to be safe from Yama. And then they cut to a Western, basically Christian funeral. Like, everyone's dressed like Catholic. Like, there's a Catholic Asian priest reading from a book that looks like the Bible. And,
he's speaking English, isn't he?
I'm pretty sure.
Why would he be doing that?
I don't know. But so I actually kind of fell down the rabbit hole a little bit looking at Chinese funerals, too. And I won't get into all of it. But their Chinese funeral rituals are very elaborate. It's so much so that, like, the sex and age and marital status of the person who died all have a bearing on precisely where the casket goes. But the other things that come to mind for me, it sounds kind of horrible, but you got to remember this is a cultural difference and we can't judge it through the lens of our own culture. In China, respect and saving face are like everything in their culture. And there's a hard rule that the older you are, the more respect you deserve. So they have this tradition that if someone's child dies, the parents are not supposed to be at the funeral because they would be seen basically as giving more respect to their child, whereas the child is supposed to respect them. That sounds like a very hard thing to navigate, quite honestly, with the death of a child, having to deal with those, like, politics of respect in an already awful situation. But again, you got to remember that they have just a different culture and a different way of viewing things.
I feel like maybe they just didn't do any research on what a Chinese burial is.
No, I really don't think so. I really don't think they did any research at all.
The sisters are there at Mark's funeral. Mark's spirit is there, and he's confiding to his mother. She saved his soul, which I thought was a really wonderful full circle moment for Mark, especially how disrespectful he was in the beginning to those beliefs and the way that he was raised. I thought it was a nice moment for him to get to say goodbye to his mom in a nice way for him to say goodbye to his mom. And the sisters are there, and Mark goes over to talk to them, and they all have these really meaningful conversations. And then Mark's dad comes to take him to the hereafter.
And then Piper is devastated.
Yeah, Piper's really upset.
Her new BF just moved on to the afterlife. And Phoebe cracks this joke that's kind of funny, but also, like, horrible, I think. Piper says, "Leave it to me to fall for a dead guy." And then Phoebe says, "At least he wasn't a warlock." Okay, that's a pretty funny read, Phoebes, but now is not the time.
No.
She is sad, and you're like, oh, you're sad about your dead boyfriend? Do you remember that time your other boyfriend tried to kill you? Ha ha!
Yeah, definitely not the time. And I mean, honestly, that trauma is probably still really fresh for Piper, because that was only a couple weeks ago. And she's been through a lot since then and hasn't really had time to process the fact that she had to murder her last boyfriend.
Oh, who hasn't had to murder a boyfriend? Okay, so the episode ends on a purely awkward note. The sisters go back home from the funeral, and Prue is like, you know, maybe we should have a party all about me. Then suddenly a million friends that they didn't have before and will never have again jump out and yell surprise. Oh my gosh, the surprise party. It happened, and Prue is so surprised. Oh my gosh. Phoebe gives Prue her gift, which she paid for with her illicit psychic job, and we never know what it was. It was just a box.
It was a card.
Yeah, it was a box with a card in it, probably.
And she's like, at least it's early.
It's a card on time. And then Andy is there, even though he and Prue have been fighting. But Andy's there across the room, and they smile back and forth at each other as though they resolved their fight, even though they didn't. And that's the end.
The end. Final thoughts.
I really love ghost love stories.
I really enjoyed this episode.
The police shootout definitely hits different in 2021. Mm-hmm. But overall, if you can ignore that one especially heinous part, I think the episode is pretty good. I think that, you know, there's a bit of cultural misrepresentation. It walks a fine line with how offensive it is, I guess. Mm-hmm. I suppose if I were Hindu and Yama was super important to me, I would think this episode was a lot more offensive than I do.
Yeah.
So that can't be discounted. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I love the ghost love story between Piper and Mark. I think it's really meaningful and beautiful. To fully enjoy it, you might have to not focus on some of the more problematic aspects surrounding it, I guess.
While that is true, there are really beautiful, lovely elements of this episode. It's privileged of us to be able to ignore that other stuff, you know?
It is, yeah.
Because the police shootout is bad. Did not age well at all. And the misrepresentation is a problem, and it's not the only time that it happens, and it's not the only time that we will be able to call it out. Even though this is a small project as of now, and it's just you and me trying to do our part to correct it now and to give as much factual information as we can, which is a big component of what we do here. We talk about representations of witchcraft and other magical things in the media. And part of our responsibility is to correct things that are wrong. And I feel like we did do that with this episode. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching it. I enjoyed watching it from a modern lens to be able to critique it. And mm-hmm. I feel like if I were rating this episode, I would give it...
Actually, before we get into the ratings, I think we need to add Mark to the boyfriend tally.
I love 80s porn.
I would give this episode 5 spectral penis boners and 5 ectoplasmic ejaculations to make an even 10 across the board for Piper's necrophilia. Yes.
I don't even know what kind of scale we're using, but I am interested.
It's kind of like in figure skating when they hold up and you get to like a certain amount, I guess.
What is the appropriate amount of ghost penises?
I would say 5. I feel like that's the most I could handle at one time.
5. Oh, if it's at one time, yeah, I'm gonna stop at 5. I would probably give this episode 5 out of 5 superstitious hot moms, but definitely 0 out of 10 for annoying, awful feminist regressions by depicting a strong, independent woman as petty and stupid.
Solid rating system. I agree with that. Siren, where can the people find you?
Oh my gosh. So you can follow me specifically on Siren Spectacular, Non-Binary Meme Witch. That's my Facebook page. You can also look me up on Twitter at Siren Spectacular, or you can check out my coven's YouTube channel, Millennial Incantations.
You can follow me on Instagram at Tyler Carson Evans, and you can follow the pod on social media at WBRcast across the board. If you have a question or something you'd like to hear us talk about, feel free to send us an email at witchbereview@gmail.com. And until next time, bye.
Bye.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?